A ballroom near the Civic Center had been set up for the affair, with high-backed velvet chairs arranged around the stage near the center. Anya managed to get in by plying her celebrity status, and the attendant at the door gave her a paddle with a number on it. She was guest 181. Anya had no use for 179 of the guests. She was only looking for one man, Arshar Gion, the man who had purchased the rare Japanese sword. But the attendant held the sheet too closely for Anya to see more than a few names on it, none of which she recognized. Anya selected a seat toward the back, where she could get a good view of the people trickling in. She'd discovered that most of the bidders would be from various parts of Spain, with others invited from France, England, Sweden, and the United States. They made an elegant crowd in their tuxedos and designer dresses, with a smattering of mink wraps thrown in. The majority were in their 60s. An owl-faced man in a burgundy tuxedo strode to the podium.
Bidding is to be in euros, but accommodation will be made for those preferring to deal with pesetas. Lot number one is an oil painting from the Cusco school. Spectacular in its condition.
It featured cherubs placing a gilded crown on the Virgin Mary. Anya's attention drifted from the rest of the auctioneer's description. She concentrated on the people who continued to dribble in. She was glad she'd spent the money on her new clothes. The designer outfit helped her blend in. There didn't seem to be a particular theme to this auction. Every kind of object was being put up for sale, mostly from museums that were cleaning out their displays, the announcement had read, making room for more acquisitions and raising funds for renovations. The next lot held more recent items. A 20th-century bronze garniture and several candelabras, gaudy and gold and pulling in only a few hundred euros. It was followed by a set of French commodes. The bid for the toilets went up to 480,000 pesetas, 3,000 euros, before the auctioneer gaveled it sold. A variety of French furniture came next, and Anya saw that a few French bidders competed. Antique tables and chairs, consoles, sofas. Anya shifted in her chair, half bored, half anxious, picking up a few names here and there when the auctioneer identified the bidders. No Arshar. If this was all for nothing... Wall hangings, antique mirrors, tapestries, sketches, and watercolors were paraded before the guests, not a piece going unsold. A man next to Anya leaned over. He was in his late 40s, tanned and solidly built.
Why are you here?
I'm interested in the swords.
Ah, American? You are the American television archaeologist. Miguel said you had asked to attend. I am Fernando. I dabble in digging, a hobby.
Pleased to meet you.
A reed-thin man in front of them drew his finger to his lips.
Shh. Sorry.
Bidding was heated for a selection of 15th-century Spanish pottery and Alcora ceramics. Conversely, an array of 19th-century glass pieces, including two boules d'escalier, went for very little. Among the odder pieces were a child's rocking boat that dated to 1910, a pair of mid-18th-century Spanish fauteuils with provenance, an Art Deco bronze lantern, and a set of Royal Doulton tobacco jars from 1900.
For those with military interest.
Anya sat up, glancing around the room.
Now we will get your swords, yes? Perhaps you will let me buy one for you.
Shh! Anya was glad the reed-thin man kept him from saying anything else.
First up is this German breastplate, circa 1580.
It was pitted, as if it had taken a lot of blows in battle. It went for 3,000 euros. Anya doubted it was worth nearly that much, especially in that condition.
A 16th-century sailor's knife. Fine condition, if simple. See how it is pierced so it can fold, yet it could also function as a deckhand's tool.
It brought only 100 euros. Anya nearly raised her paddle, knowing it was a very good price and thinking she could donate it to a museum in New York, but better not to draw attention.
In the second half of the 19th century, change swept through the world. Industries, including Toledo-etched cutlery, came to the fore and brought out a renewed interest in arms and armor. Some artisans rendered masterpieces that rivaled the sword makers of the Renaissance. Anton Conrad of Munich, Germany, was one such designer. We have, for your bidding pleasure, one of his more noted works.
Anya leaned closer to Fernando so she could see between the people in front of them. It was a broadsword from the 16th century. A monitor overhead magnified the lavish embellishment of mulberry motifs in relief. She put it at a little more than 3 feet long.
Would you like that one?
Shh! Anya shook her head. A portly man named Javier won the bid at 16,000 euros. Another sword was brought out, a rapier with shell guards etched with classical figures and foliage in a Brescian pattern. The work ended in fleur-de-lis motifs on the guards' quadrants.
This blade is Spanish, signed by Francisco Ruiz, from 1650.
Bidding closed at 140,000 euros.
Ah, Miss Creed, I fear this next sword is beyond even my price range.
I present a sword of El Cid. Rodrigo Diaz Vivar, better known to the world as El Cid, was born in a small village not very far from Burgos. A knight, a warrior, educated and brave, he was the right hand of Don Sancho and fought battles in Zaragoza, Zamora, and Coimbra. He was exiled in 1081 from Castile, but returned to Burgos 6 years later. He was exiled again in 1089.
A handful of bidders got up to leave, including the couple who had purchased the collection of French commodes.
El Cid is credited with furthering the Christian religion. He surrounded himself with poets, living magnificently in Valencia.
The sword was brought out.
On the 10th of July, 1099, El Cid passed from the world, and the Christian community mourned him. He is buried in a cathedral in Castile. One of his swords is here today.
A blade, which was more a work of art than a weapon, was placed on a table covered in dark red velvet.
Tizona, a sword important enough to have a name. It is said to have a divine power. Though forged in Cordoba, it has Damascus steel in its blade and bears two inscriptions. The first reads, Yo soy Tizona, fue fecha en la era del 1040. I am Tizona.
Anya lost the rest of what he said when she heard someone whisper to someone else.
Asha.
Anya looked for the speaker.
The second inscription reads, Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum. Which is, of course, Latin for Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with you. We will start the bidding at 500,000 euros.
Fernando stretched an arm behind Anya, and she got up and moved to the back of the room near the door, leaving him open-mouthed and staring after her. She stood next to the attendant who had checked people off the guest list. She studied each man who raised his paddle and bid.
1 million euros.
1 million euros to Archard Gion of Paris.
Anya saw him then.
Do you know this Archard Gion?
First auction I have seen him at. I understand he and his associate are collectors of antique weapons. They requested invitations.
They?
A Professor Charles Lawton of Rouen.
1.5 million euros to William Sandoval.
A professor?
I do not know what he teaches.
She could tell he was tall, judging by how he sat in the chair. Gray tuxedo jacket, long white hair pulled back in a ponytail. She couldn't see his face, or Char's, either, but she would. They would have to walk by her to leave the room. She thought about bidding against them.
2 million euros to Archard Gion.
It was far too rich for her. Bidding continued in incremental jumps of 100,000. Fernando craned his neck around, saw her, and winked. She pretended not to see him. Anya figured he knew better than to raise his hand, lest the auctioneer take it as a bid.
2,500,000 euros.
Everyone in this room was rich, but apparently even by wealthy standards, this was getting a little too pricey for one piece.
3 million euros.
It has now exceeded anticipated figures. The museum was reluctant to put it up, but they will be quite pleased.
4 million euros to Archard Gion.
4 million euros for one sword. Anya held her breath.
Vendido!
Another small table was brought out, filled with an assortment of jewelry, with a large tiara sparkling in the light. Anya ignored the spiel and the starting bids. Her full attention was on Archard Gion and Dr. Charles Lawton, who had gotten up from their seats and were bent over a desk at the side of the room, no doubt making arrangements to pay for Tizona. There was a door nearby, and for a moment, Anya was fearful they would slip out before she could catch up, but they headed down the far aisle toward the back of the room where she was standing. She decided she would follow them out, rehearsing how she would introduce herself. They stopped directly in front of her.
Anya Creed, I am Archard Gion, and this is...
Professor Charles Lawton. Good to finally meet you, Miss Creed. I have heard a great deal about the famous American archaeologist.
She is from, the program called Chasing History's Monsters. Shall we? So we don't disrupt the others. What brings you to Spain, Miss Creed, and to this auction?
Actually, I came looking for you. Both of you.
Excellent. A happy coincidence, Miss Cree, as I have been searching for you.
You have something we need to acquire.
A special sword. Did you bring it with you? I will offer you a more than fair price for your sword, Miss Creed. As you saw from the auction, I am willing to spend considerable money to acquire fine things.
Swords. To obtain swords.
Particular swords. Ones with an important history.
El Cid's sword, for one.
Tithona, this was only one of El Cid's swords.
The most important one.
Miss Creed, I am interested in discussing your sword, not one I have already acquired. I am a busy man, and idle talk doesn't fit into my schedule. Shall we begin with a price?
I don't have the sword with me.
But you can get it.
It's not for sale. The Japanese katana. You bought that...
Honjo Masamune. A shard purchased that one. I was committed to a series of lectures.
So Mr. Gion bought it for you.
Again, I am not interested in talking about blades I have already acquired.
Just the ones you've yet to collect.
About your sword.
It's not for sale.
Everything has a price, Miss Creed. Shall we say 1,000,000 euros?
Anya brushed by Lawton, but a hand clamped on her arm. Her surprise held her in place. It was Arshar's hand, and his strong grip tightened for a moment before he released her.
What right do you think you have?
Arshar took a step back.
Miss Creed, you talk of rights. By right, your sword should be mine anyway. It should have passed to me.
If you'll excuse me, Dr. Lawton, Mr. Gion.
Anya managed a half dozen steps.
Joan of Arc's sword. Truly, it should be mine. I should have inherited it.
She whirled around, a thousand thoughts spinning in her head.
I know the sword you wield once belonged to Joan of Arc. It is a singular sword with five crosses etched on the pommel. I know singular swords. I know your sword's history.
Dr. Lawton, Mr. Gion.
Dr. Gion.
Dr. Gion, this is neither the time nor the place.
So you will not consider selling it to me? Pity. Unfortunate for both of us. I have more money than I need. You could be set for life.
Neither the time nor the place.
Then I will call on you later at your hotel. Perhaps I can convince you to change your mind. I can be quite persuasive. Do not dismiss me so lightly. Ashar, shall we retrieve Tithona?
Anya set her feet and stepped with her pounding heart. It was late, but the city still bustled, with cars and horse-drawn carriages passing by, and lights from clubs, restaurants, and other hotels looking like fireworks come to ground. She headed south toward her own hotel.
Why did Lawton upset me so much?
He'd offered to buy her sword, which she couldn't sell even if she wanted to. At least, she didn't think she could.
Why am I so upset? He can't get my sword.
That he knew about it. She'd been so careful, or thought she had. Rue and his nemesis Garin, another man helplessly tied to Joan of Arc's story over the centuries, wouldn't have told a soul.
It is a singular sword with five crosses etched on the pommel.
How did Lawton know that?
Her sword had a name, or at the very least, a title.
What is it?
The air was still and warm, and felt good against her face, even though it smelled of automobile exhaust, spoiled food from curbside garbage, and creosote from a parking lot paving project. Anya's senses were acute, and she sifted through the conflicting aromas to the scent of flowers. She spied them in baskets hanging from street poles. And something else. The hair on the back of her neck rose. She spun around, peering into the shadows.
Am I being followed?
She turned back around and kept walking, her pace slower and determined, her feet aching from the new shoes. She was being followed. She just couldn't see the watcher. Lawton lacked the speed to have kept up with her. Arshar Gion, perhaps, as he seemed younger and more athletic. Lawton had the money to employ a lot of people, like the Romanys. So, he was collecting named swords. The Wallace sword and Durandal were two, but they'd been stolen.
Does Lawton believe the end justifies the means?
Anya was certain that Lawton thought so. He wanted to purchase her sword, and she'd said no. He'd tried to have it stolen from her in France.
Will he try again? You're in Spain.
When she reached her hotel room, she locked the deadbolt, set a chair in front of the door, and tried to dull her concerns in a hot bubble bath. It was futile. Anya had intended to spend what was left of the night on her laptop researching Charles Lawton, but sleep beckoned.
Good morning, Anya Creed.
She sat bolt upright. Two men stood at the foot of her bed. Morning? It still looked dark, but just enough light came in through the open window to reveal the men to be twins. Anya slammed her hand down on the light switch on the nightstand. The lamp flickered on and they blinked. She took their measure in an instant, lithe, athletic, muscles tensed beneath their tight-fitting pants and short-sleeved shirts, their clothes the color of shadows. She reached for the phone.
Don't.
She reached for the sword, felt it with her mind, but decided not to call it. That would be what they wanted, wouldn't it?
Dr. Lawton sent you.
You are a beautiful woman, Miss Creed. If you want to keep being beautiful and keep breathing, you should surrender...
My sword.
She swung her legs over the side of the bed. She'd worn a pair of flannel shorts and a loose t-shirt to bed. Sometimes she didn't even wear that much, and was glad she'd opted for something a little more last night.
I thought Dr. Lawton wanted to buy it.
And I thought you had declined to sell it.
I don't have it with me. You're welcome to search my bag, not that any decent-sized sword would fit in it. I've got nothing in the closet but an expensive dress.
We think you do have it with you. Get up.
His twin reached behind him and pulled a sword from a sheath at his back. It was a pitted katana.
Honjo Masamune.
Perceptive. Now get up.
One of the twins tossed her a pair of shoes, the only tennis shoes she'd brought with her.
Put them on. Hurry.
This one pointed to his waistband. The handle of a Sig Sauer protruded. For the moment, she'd play along. Glancing at the nightstand, she saw it was 5 a.m.
Where are we going?
To get your sword, Miss Creed.
I'm not dressed to go anywhere. Don't you think I'll raise some eyebrows in the lobby?
Move. We are not going out that way.
He pointed his sword toward the window. At the same time, his brother fitted a silencer on his gun.
If you don't cooperate, we'll end this now.
The gun was aimed at her. For a moment, Anya felt the pommel of her sword against her palm, but she pushed it away. She padded to the window and looked out. The roadway below was shiny, the glow from streetlights reflecting off the pavement. It must have rained a little while ago. The sky was only now starting to lighten.
18th floor. Do you expect me to jump?
There is a ledge.
The one with the gun moved up behind her.
Step out onto it. Be careful.
You can't be serious. You want me on the ledge? We're 18 stories off the ground.
It should be no difficult matter for you. Step out onto it. Walk to the fire escape on the corner, and we will follow you.
Anya opened her mouth to protest again, but then decided against it. The ledge was certainly wide enough. It was how they'd reached her room. Someone on the street, or in one of the few passing cars, might see her and call the police. But did she really want that? Anya slipped out the window and walked east, the ledge a balance beam. She moved quickly, thinking she'd put some distance between them and then get up to the roof where there was more room to fight, or at least where she'd have more options. Anya wrapped her fingers around the iron of the fire escape and started climbing, not giving them a chance to tell her what direction she was supposed to go.
I thought your boss was willing to buy my sword. He made an opening bid last night.
You refused. Have you changed your mind?
No.
Anya glanced down. Both men were close behind her. The one with the sword had sheathed it to have his hands free to climb, and she saw that he had a second sheath and a smaller blade below it. From her vantage point, she also saw a sheath on the other twin's back. Both were swordsmen.
So if I'm not willing to sell, you're going to try to steal it from me?
Climb.
Anya was doing just that. She stood a yard from the edge of the roof. Her hotel was the tallest building on the block at 22 stories, and it gave her a remarkable view of the city. The sky was lighter up here, the air cooler and cleaner.
Now where to?
Your sword. We have come to...
Yes, I know. You've brought me up here because you want my sword. You have me at more than one disadvantage. I'm practically in my underwear. I've no idea where we're going.
To get your sword.
And I have no idea who you are.
Gaëtan. I'm Gaëtan.
His brother shot him a withering look, but Gaëtan only shrugged.
It doesn't matter that she knows my name.
The other man didn't introduce himself, but he drew the sword again. A heartbeat later, he pulled out the other, a saber. Relatively new from the looks of it.
Honjo Masamune, a fine weapon. Dr. Lawton gave it to you.
To use. Only for my brother to use. But not so fine a blade as yours. Now, your sword, please.
Anya walked backward.
That's far enough.
Anya judged that she was roughly in the middle of the roof, where it would be harder for anyone below to see her. She held her arms out.
You think I'm going to take you to some locker at the airport where I have it stashed? What sword?
Joan of Arc's. Produce it now.
I don't know what you're...
You know exactly. You can produce it out of thin air.
How do you know? Just tell me. How do you know about my sword? Tell me how you know. Give me that much.
A fair request. In researching swords online, Miss Creed, your name came up. There were no pictures, but what there was intriguing. When you came to France, publicity of your filming preceded you. It saved us a trip to your country. Convenient that you came to us. In Paris, it wasn't difficult to have you followed and provoked.
And what makes you think my sword belonged to Joan of Arc?
A portrait?
Only one portrait was painted of her in the famous sword, and history records it as being burned.
History is not always right. I have seen it. That's enough. We've told her more than necessary. Wasted minutes. The sword, now.
I hand it over, and you let me walk away.
Of course.
You've told me your name, and I've seen your faces.
The sword and you walk. Easy. My word and my honor.
Gaëtan pushed the Sig Sauer into the waistband of his pants. Anya concentrated. In the same breath, her fingers wrapped around the pommel. She held the sword with both hands, up and ready, but made no move on them.
Set it down.
Joan of Arc had two others, you know. Swords.
Not as important as your sword. Those other two Joan used. And they were easily obtained, purchased. I've seen them, too.
Gaëtan took a step closer. His twin shot him a look.
That's enough. Fine. Now do not make this too difficult, Miss Creed. Surrender the sword.
Surrender it now, or I will lop off your hand to get it.
Come and get it, then.
Anya crouched. The man with two blades came at her first, and in the same instant, Gaëtan pulled a sword from his back, a saber. They separated, coming at her from each side, flanking her. Anya spun to parry Gaëtan's lunge. He was using the flat of his blade, not trying for a lethal strike. The other twin led with the katana. Anya jumped back and pulled her arms in tight as he brought the katana down where her arms had been. He had just tried to cut off her hands. Anya shifted her weight to the balls of her feet and reassessed her situation. The pair exhibited considerable skill, and they fought in the manner of fencers. When they came at her again, Anya pivoted as she crouched. She came up and kicked out, catching Gaëtan on the jaw. In pain and anger, he swung faster, turning the blade. He was no longer trying to hit her with the flat of it, but his temper made him sloppy, and his rhythm was off. Anya dropped under the swinging weapons of both men, spinning toward the roof access door. She darted closer to Gaëtan, who appeared only slightly less adept than his brother. Ducking again, she brought her elbow up when she straightened this time, jabbing him in the stomach. Gaëtan stumbled backward, and Anya followed, keeping a wary eye on the other one. She brought her sword up to knock away the saber and tried to avoid the swipe of the katana. Anya then noted a line of red forming on her arm and registered the sting of her injury. He stabbed both weapons at her, nearly connecting again. She decided to pursue Gaëtan first, get him out of the way. So Anya raised her leg at a high angle and kicked at his head. The move succeeded in catching him off guard. She turned into him and jabbed him in the stomach again. Anya avoided the katana by a hair's breadth. Neither man spoke, concentrating on flanking her. They both wore fencing chest protectors made of Kevlar. In her t-shirt and flannel sleep shorts, Anya had no such advantage. Gaëtan lunged, and she parried with her own thrust. He circled her like a cat, his twin mirroring the move to retain the flank, both stepping back beyond her reach. Then the unnamed twin darted forward and almost managed to hit her twice. He would have if she hadn't blocked him. She sidestepped, at the same time feeling the katana rip her t-shirt.
Last chance. Hand over the sword.
Is the sword worth your life?
Is it worth yours?
They weren't giving her much of a choice. She changed her grip on the sword, noticed Gaëtan registering the move. She wasn't using the flat of the blade any longer. He smiled slightly as he lunged and retreated, changing the tempo of his swings. Anya inched toward Gaëtan's brother. Anya suddenly sprinted past him and slashed, catching the katana and nearly wrenching it out of his grip. At the same time, Gaëtan jabbed at her, the tip of the saber biting into her side. Anya performed a forward recovery, stepping into the en garde position and unexpectedly throwing them out of their flanking roles. She fainted successfully toward Gaëtan, sweeping in and slicing at his protective vest. It didn't hurt him, but it forced him back. The twin leaped forward and kicked, catching her in the stomach. She brought her sword around at his leading arm. Gaëtan shot forward with a drop kick, his heel connecting waist high and sending her back into the metal door. Anya bounded to her right just as both of them stabbed forward. She whipped around the side of the structure, feet flying across the rooftop. That's when it came to her. She'd seen them before in an Olympic fencing match she'd attended in China. She ran faster, knowing they were right behind her. She reached the edge of the roof and leaped right off, dismissing the sword and stretching her arms forward. The buildings were close together, and she cleared the gap, falling a full two stories to the neighboring structure. She tucked and rolled, landing with her knees bent, A painful, jarring sensation shot up her spine. She sprang up and risked a glance over her shoulder, in time to see both brothers flying toward her over the gap, Gaëtan with his sword out. The other twin had sheathed both of his. They would clear the distance. She didn't need to watch. Anya continued to run, calling the sword to her again. She shot past the access door to this building, rusted and not sitting straight in its frame. But by the time she stopped to open it, the men would be on her. Anya was soaring again, propelling herself off the roof and onto another, this time only a one-story drop. She'd kept the sword out this time. This was a better landing, but the pain shooting up her legs was worse. Anya caught her breath and twisted around to see both brothers leaping too. But one was a beat ahead of the other. She stepped to the edge of the roof. Anya swung with all her strength, catching Gaëtan across the stomach. He fell, hands flailing for any kind of purchase, but coming up with nothing. She'd managed to knock him far enough out that he couldn't grab the edge of the building. His twin landed on the roof within an arm's length of her. He looked over the side.
No, Gaëtan! Gaëtan, no!
Anya used the precious moment to gain some distance, darting toward the center of the roof and another access door. The man charged her with both swords swinging. Anya put her back against the access door. She dropped to the roof as both his swords passed through where she stood a breath ago. Anya slipped under his next swings, changing position with him so now he had his back to the door.
My brother, you killed him!
His rage was saving her. His attack was uneven and his footwork was off. Anya parried each blow. Then she took the offensive, lunging and recovering. Anya lunged again, an unanticipated move that let her land a blow, but it was against his chest, her blade scraping the Kevlar and not hurting him.
I don't want to kill you.
You'll be joining my brother, bitch. You'll be the one to die.
He extended his left arm with the saber. Then he swept at her with the katana. She skittered back a few steps, but this man was better than her, and he didn't have her injuries.
Why does Lawton want all these swords?
Her opponent leveled a sharp, controlling blow against her sword, not managing to knock it aside, but loosening her grip. Anya clamped both hands around the pommel in response and held tight. He followed through with the saber, bringing it down hard at an angle, as if chopping a piece of wood. Out of the corner of her eye, Anya saw several windows open. Faces appeared, some of the watchers waving frantically. Anya jockeyed for a better angle, thrusting low and trying to catch her opponent beneath his protective vest. She fainted and tried again, cutting his saber arm instead when he brought it in for a failed parry. Blood sprayed in an arc from his wound, but he didn't drop either sword.
Murderer! Bitch!
Yeah. Then he struck with a compound attack, hitting her sword, nearly wresting it from her. He scored a second hit with the katana deep into her leg. Anya dropped to her knees and slammed her teeth together to keep from screaming.
Murderer!
He came at her once more. She drove her sword up like a spear, finding a seam in the Kevlar and pushing in. He stepped away from her blade, dropping the saber and pressing his hand to the wound. All the while, he slashed at her with the katana, keeping her from stabbing him a second time. He continued to swing at her with the weapon, but he was distracted, and his gaze flashed between Anya and the edge of the roof.
The cops will come up here.
You're dead, bitch.
Everyone dies. I just don't intend to today.
Despite the agony, Anya forced herself to stand. She met his next blow, fainting and sliding her sword against the edge of the katana, catching one of the deeper nicks. She beat her sword against his, stepping in and standing on his dropped saber.
How about you? Are you ready to die today?
He swung the katana back, the tip touching the access door behind him. Anya moved before he could bring it forward, lightning fast, kicking high at his head. Then she kicked lower and rammed him in the stomach. The air left his lungs, but he didn't go down. He held his right leg back. But he straightened the left, his heel catching her across the kneecap of her already wounded leg. Anya dropped again, awash in dizziness. She watched as he raised the katana once more. He looked like an executioner.
Bitch!
The access door behind him opened.
Another day!
He whipped around, running across the roof, sheathing the katana as he went. Another day. Anya saw him leap. Then blackness claimed her. Rue sat next to her in the hospital room. Her flannel shorts and ripped T-shirt had been replaced by a hospital gown. Anya looked up at an eggshell-white ceiling. Sun streamed in through a window to brighten the already yellow walls. She smelled flowers, a small bouquet on the stand, probably from Rue, and the astringent scent of antiseptic. There was a clamp on her finger, monitoring her pulse. The panel on the machine next to the bed displayed her heart rate.
The police have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions, too. They have an officer outside your room to question you when you're up to it. You were in surgery for a while. You were cut badly, Anya. The doctors thought you might lose your leg.
My leg?
You didn't. It's still there, under all the bandages. And no doubt your indefatigable constitution saved it.
How long?
They brought you in yesterday morning before 6, so the night shift doctor stayed on longer to work on you. I didn't get here until last night. You heal remarkably fast, Anya, but you could have died.
I know. He was good, Rue. Maybe the best I ever fought.
Who?
I don't know, but his brother...
Ah, that would be the man they found on the dumpster in the alley?
His name was Gaëtan.
I suppose if I buy a newspaper today, I might find the report and the obituary.
They were swordsmen, Rue. Good. And the one...
Who got away?
So the other twin had managed to leap to another building and elude the police. But he was wounded. He'd have to get medical help somewhere.
He was better than me.
I don't know about that, Anya.
I do.
Anya told him about being rousted out of bed by the two men, forced to climb to the roof.
I know that he was better than me.
Indulge an old man, and tell me the rest of the story.
She did. About Arshar Gion and Dr. Lawton, about the auction and Tithona, the sword of El Cid, about Hanjo Masamune, which was wielded against her, and before that, the theft of Durandal from Rocamadour and the Wallace sword from near Stirling.
And there might be more. It only started, really, to dig into it.
I warned you, Anya.
But I have to see what it's all about. This guy is more than just an obsessed collector. He knows something about Joan's sword, too. I need to find out what it is.
Even if you didn't want to pursue it, I fear it would pursue you.
That man I fought? He'll be back.
And what about this Dr. Lawton from the auction?
I'm gonna get out of here.
Not today, Anya. You do heal fast, but not that fast. You're not immortal.
Like you?
You really were close to death.
I'm going...
You're going to stay here, at least until tomorrow. Promise me. Any other soul who suffered that cut probably would have lost a leg. And the other soul would be laid up a week or more. You can give it until tomorrow.
No, I can't.
Promise me.
Ugh, fine.
Get better. Rest. I've got a feeling we'll have to be at our best.
What do you mean we, Kimosabi?
Rue stooped and picked Anya's laptop up off the floor, setting it on the bedside table.
I checked you out of your hotel. Your suitcase is over there, in the closet. When you feel better, start pursuing your quarry through the mystical space of the web. Knowledge is indeed power. I'll be back to check on you tonight. Then you can tell me where we are headed.
Again, with the we, Anya was simultaneously pleased with and dreading the notion that Rue was involving himself in this. She watched him leave, and then opened the laptop and started typing. She didn't start with Gaëtan, or Arshar, or Charles Lawton. The men's names would come later. She pulled up the Google search engine and typed in named swords. Sarah couldn't pronounce the name of the place she'd slipped into 20 minutes ago. The Kunsthistorisches Museum. It was the biggest building she'd ever set foot in. Resembling both a castle and some grand government building, it stretched across several blocks of Vienna. The sight of it this afternoon had taken her breath away. But her faith and her belief in Dr. Lawton's plan wasn't keeping her nerves in check. The voices in her head weren't helping. They were only adding to her doubts, questioning if she was up for this. Maybe if someone was with her, if she wasn't prowling the halls and stairwells alone, she wouldn't feel so skittish. Sarah looked at her watch. She had 40 minutes left. The German had only given her 1 hour. He was elsewhere in the building. He had used his expertise to finesse the security system and reroute monitors and replay loops so guards wouldn't notice her. But he wasn't going to stay long. Ulrich said that any more than 1 hour would be too risky. He had a car a block away parked in an alley outside a service entrance. If Sarah didn't show up on time, he'd leave without her. There was another man with them. He called himself Crescendo, though Sarah knew that wasn't his real name. Pierre DePaul was a 30-something graduate student assigned to Dr. Lawton. She didn't know why he called himself Crescendo and wasn't going to ask. She just went along with it like everyone else. One of the professor's paladins, Crescendo's specialty was restoration and maintenance. The sword she was tasked with retrieving tonight would be passed along to him for sprucing up, and then it would be hers. Dr. Lawton had officially named her one of his paladins before he left for Spain, and said as such it was time to claim her weapon. He'd presented her with a few choices. At the time, she'd thought this would be the easiest to obtain. She didn't tell him that, though. She'd said the history of it entranced her, and she thought her inner spirit most fit that of the man who'd once wielded it. If she could find it. 35 minutes left.
Damn Arshar!
As much as she railed against his company and his insistence that he run things, she wished he was here. He would have made her case the museum during the day, exploring the exhibits, reading up on the history, playing the tourist. It's what he'd ordered in Rocamadour and Stirling, and both thefts went off without a hitch. But he was in Spain with Dr. Lawton, getting a sword the legal way, and she'd told them she could handle this mission. The voices in her head told her she should be in charge. After all, she'd done such a good job on the initial cleansing foray in Rouen, leaving no solid clues for the police with the slain Buddhists and Scientologists. She'd gotten herself and the twins in and out, and then she'd returned to Paris with a triumphant accounting of their bloody activities. Sarah hadn't wanted to spend the time scouting the place out in person. The voices in her head always chided her for pretending to be a tourist. Besides, she'd looked it up on the internet. Unfortunately, the website didn't reveal just how humongous this place was. She'd seen a picture of the sword and noted which room it was in. She'd borrowed the glass-cutting kit from Ulrich and had a piece of cloth in her pack to wrap the sword in. She'd dressed in tight-fitting black-and-gray clothes so she'd look like a shadow as she skulked through this place, and her shoes were ballet slippers, soundless. 30 minutes, and she'd looked through every nook and cranny of the room the sword was supposed to be in. She found the case where it had been. Empty.
Damn, damn, damn!
There was a card in the case, and she pulled out a small flashlight to read it. God, it was dark in this museum. To conserve electricity, there were lights only in the halls, and they were dim. She started to read the card.
Mother Pusbucket!
The voices in her head chanted far worse profanity. The security guard. Noting the curtains in this room, heavy fabric, brocade or velvet, she hid behind one. Sarah was small and knew she wouldn't disturb the folds enough to draw attention. A light came on. She listened as he made a circuit of the large room. The light flicked off. Sarah waited a few seconds before looking out.
Oh.
Gone. She glanced at her watch. 25 minutes left. Sarah didn't want to run from this empty-handed. If she didn't get this sword, maybe Dr. Lawton would de-paladinize her. Maybe it would be months before she could regain his favor. She skittered to the empty case and flicked on her flashlight. Removed for restoration.
No! Son of a...
If Arshar had been here, if they'd visited this museum as tourists, she would have known the sword was gone. Dr. Lawton was going to be seriously pissed. Sarah slunk from the room. She started toward the back staircase. Sarah wanted to kick herself for not following Arshar's lead and scoping the place out during operating hours. To see everything well lit would be amazing, but to leave without her prize...
Wait a minute, the sword is being restored? Is it being restored here?
When she'd been on the museum website, she'd read about their labs in the basement. The Kunsthistorisches was a fine arts museum, with staff to do restoration on its paintings. That's what the place was known for, the work of the masters that hung on the seemingly never-ending walls. Paintings had been displayed here for more than 100 years, the building commissioned originally so the Habsburgs' art collection could be seen by the public. Sarah looked at her watch when she hit the lower landing. 15 minutes to go. If she left right this minute, she'd have a little time to spare to make it to the alley and the rental car. But the prize... The restoration lab was only one floor down, if she correctly recalled what she'd read on the website.
Damn it! If only I'd paid more attention. Hadn't been so cocky.
Sarah hurried down the rest of the steps. She emerged into a corridor almost as dark as a cave. The only light came from right above her head and the far end marked exit. She pressed herself against the wall and listened. Not a single footfall. She'd noted the presence of only 3 guards since she'd come in here. Sarah had expected more, and maybe there were. It was a big, big place, after all. But maybe they'd grown a little lax with security. It had been a decade since Cellini's salt cellar had been stolen, recovered a couple years later. At the time, it had been the greatest theft of an art treasure in Austria. How many minutes did she have left? She glanced toward her watch, and then stopped herself.
Just do it.
She inched down the hall, pausing at doors, and shining her flashlight in through the windows. On the third stop, she found a workroom filled with tables. She almost kept going, but then spotted a shield on one of them.
Bingo!
The door was locked, but there looked to be nothing modern or high-tech about it. Sarah reached into her pack and pulled out a set of picks the German had given her. She knew how to use them. That had been one of the first skills she'd picked up after joining Dr. Lawton's group. She made the sign of the cross over her chest. Not that she was Catholic. Methodist, born and raised. But the gesture gave her a small measure of confidence.
Dear God, please let Auric have knocked out any surveillance down here.
A moment later, the tumblers fell into place. She was inside, flashing the light over each table. Spears and more shields, a chunk of breastplate, and one sword.
Be it. Dear God, be it.
Sarah practically floated toward the table. The sword lay on a piece of felt-like material. A study lamp of some sort stretched over it. She flipped the switch.
This is mine.
First, it had been Attila's, and now it was hers. Her fingers touched the blade. Attila the Hun had thought he was destined to rule the world. His reputation had earned him the title the Scourge of God. His sword, the Sword of God. Sarah wrapped her right hand around the pommel and marveled at the decorative goldwork. A disc at the handle's base was worn, but looked almost globe-like, perhaps reflecting the warlord's plan to conquer the world. The delicate designs were worn in places, especially along the guard that curved upward and inward like the sweeping horns of a bull. Her sword. Hers to help in the cleansing. She couldn't wait to show this to the twins and to gloat over it, especially as Gaëtan didn't have his named sword yet. This one? Sarah's very special sword. The Sword of God, it was called, and Tiu. Attila had named it Tiu after his ancestor's war god.
Tiu. Sarah and Tiu.
Attila had ruled the Huns for almost 2 decades. His empire was vast, from the Urals to the Rhine, from the Baltic Sea to the Danube. He'd plundered the Balkans, invaded Italy, but couldn't capture Rome. Could she help Dr. Lawton capture Rouen with this? It felt good in her hand. Her hand. She turned her arm so she could see her watch. Time was up, more than up. She dashed out of the room, holding Tiu close and knocking one of the shields off a table in her rush. Sarah paused in the hallway. For a moment, she couldn't recall which way she'd come, with 2 exit lights offering her ways out. She picked the closest and ran. Out the door and up the stairs. Lights were coming on upstairs.
Has Auric left without me? It's been way more than an hour. But he wouldn't abandon me, would he? I'm one of Dr. Lawton's chosen paladins. He can't leave me.
Up another flight of stairs and down a hall she'd been through before.
Stop! Halt!
Sarah ran faster and raced for the back exit she'd come in. Then she was behind the building and across a parking lot, flying into the Vienna night. Sarah ran into a small park and hid behind a tree. She listened to the sirens. How many? Checking for a number gave her an excuse to stand there and catch her breath. 1, 2, definitely 3. Lights came on outside the museum, and the flashing lights of police cars joined in. The station must not have been far. She ran again, having gotten her bearings. The alley where the rental car had been parked was less than a block away. Sarah cut toward it, darting from tree to tree and then dashing across an intersection, away from the museum. Lights played across the palatial structure, revealing people milling on the steps. She clung to the buildings on this side of the street, slipping under awnings and pausing in crevices to watch the scene. The sirens had stopped, but there were even more lights, a police van. There were gawkers out on the street, too.
Where did they come from? Apartments? Bars?
Didn't matter. She had to get out of here before they looked down this block. In the alley, she felt a little better. It wasn't as dark as when they'd parked here. The lights from the museum stretched to the ends of the alley. Sarah tried to calm down, but failed. She stumbled toward the spot where Ulrich had left the car. It was gone. Sarah held the sword even tighter against her and wedged herself into a narrow space between buildings.
What am I going to do? My purse, passport, airline ticket, change of clothes, all that's in the car with Ulrich and Crescendo. What the hell am I going to do?
Get in.
Ulrich had brought the car back with its lights off, pulling in so quietly that she hadn't heard it coming. Sarah slid into the back seat next to Crescendo. Ulrich exited the alley and pointed the car away from the museum and the assembly of police cars.
I found my sword. Ulrich, Crescendo, meet Chew. It never left Attila's side, and now it won't leave mine.
Oh yes, it will. Chew will be carefully packed away in the belly of our chartered plane before midnight.
Sarah wasn't listening. She was thinking about what outfit she would wear when Dr. Lawton presented her and Chew to the other paladins. Maybe she'd go out and buy something new. Her take from the cash box at the Buddhist bookstore was burning a hole in her pocket. Maybe the voices in her head would help her pick something appropriate. She patted the sword's pommel.
My sword.
And now we're going to get mine, sweet Sarah.
What?
We've got another stop in Vienna. One of Charlemagne's swords is on display at the Imperial Treasury. It's not far, and with the police distracted at the Kunsthistorisches Museum, it should be easy.
And Sarah, this time if you're not out in an hour, we really will leave you behind.
Ulrich looked into the rearview mirror, turned on the car's lights, and sped up. Anya looked up from her laptop as the nurse entered her hospital room. She was polite and smiled sweetly, a practiced expression that Anya thought was only half genuine.
The police officer outside would like to talk to you.
I'm so tired, I think I'll sleep for a while. Tell him I'll talk to him later.
Her.
Tell her then.
The nurse shut the door on her way out. Anya kept surfing. Anger Vidal was the first one she came to, a sword whose name meant Stream of Anguish, Frithjof's weapon. But Frithjof the Bold was a mythical Norse character, and so Anya skipped on to the next. Arondite, the sword of Lancelot, another piece of fiction. Collada. Anya stopped at that one. It was another of El Cid's swords. She bookmarked it. A real sword, it might be a legitimate target of Dr. Lawton's. She'd get back to it, figure out where Collada was, and if it could be obtained, legally or otherwise. Corogue, sword of Otuel. Another possibility that she bookmarked. Otuel had been a Saracen ambassador to Charlemagne, and history claimed he was rude and imperious. He'd challenged Roland to a duel, fighting first on horseback. Both horses died in the fight, and the two men continued their brawl. At Charlemagne's urging, all the spectators prayed for Roland to survive and for Otuel to convert to Christianity. Scholars record the incident as a miracle. A snow-white bird had appeared and perched on Otuel's shoulder. The Saracen ended the fight that very moment, called Roland his brother, and became a Christian. Cortana, the Sword of Mercy, Edward the Confessor's blunted sword. She saved this one, too. She remembered actually seeing this sword somewhere, probably a few years ago in a museum. Could it also be a target? Flamberge, another of Charlemagne's swords, was pictured in its display case in a museum in Vienna. It was reported stolen less than a day ago. The sword had also been used by Rinaldo, one of Charlemagne's 12 peers.
Damn him. Just how many swords does the man need?
She concentrated on sifting, ignoring Excalibur as fiction, along with Merveilleuse, Quernbiter, Azoth, and Schritt. Durandal was linked to a website with a picture of precisely where it had hung, as well as another picture of the piece that had been embedded in the cliff. There was another link to the story of its theft, in which Brother Maynard was quoted.
A loss for all of France.
She found Tithona in a link to a story about the auction and how much money the sword went for. Lured by other links off this page, Anya searched for upcoming auctions, but didn't find anything about swords.
Too bad he couldn't collect comic books for a hobby, or baseball cards or those little Hummel figurines.
She closed the link and moved to another that referenced a weaponsmith, Munificant, who supposedly forged Durandal, along with Sauvagine and Courtin, for a fellow named Ogier the Dane, one of Charlemagne's peers. The swords each took 3 years to make and were said to have a spark of the divine. Since Durandal was already stolen, she suspected the other two were on Lawton's list. She added them to her own list. So many named swords.
What is mine called?
Joyeuse. Anya stopped cold, something percolating in her brain. She highlighted the reference. If Durandal was taken, Joyeuse must also be on the list. Both were said to be god-touched swords. Joyeuse was one of history's most famous weapons, in the Louvre. Likely safe there with all the security. She'd seen it in passing years ago when she was looking at an old master's exhibit. Next, Philippan was the sword of Antony. Caliburn was another name for Excalibur. She passed by this entry. If Anya couldn't dig in the dirt, her passion, she'd dig through the various websites hosted by museums and history buffs around the world. She skimmed over replica weapons pages, which were good for finding more important links and for getting a look at copies of various swords. She had to admit the replica of Honjo Masamune looked in much better shape than the real one wielded by the twin who had almost killed her. Lobera had belonged to King Saint Ferdinand III of Castile. Napoleon's sword had been sold at an auction years ago for $6.5 million.
Lawton, perhaps? Does he have that much money?
She couldn't find a record of the sword having a name, though, and moved on. Kusanagi, also called Grasscutter, was the sword of the Gathering Clouds of Heaven.
Huh, more fiction.
Legbiter. That sounded fictitious, too. But after reading further, she put it on her list. It was a sword belonging to the Viking king Magnus Barelegs, killed in County Down in 1109. Szczerbiec, the coronation blade of Polish kings. A sword at West Point was said to be the personal weapon of Tomoyuki Yamashita, a general of the Japanese Imperial Army in World War II. Too recent. Zulfikar. She noted this one too, an ancient sword of Ali, an Islamic leader related to Muhammad. Grus, wielded by the Polish prince Bolesław III Rymouth. The sword from heaven, wielded by Joan of Arc, once belonging to Charlemagne, lost to history.
The sword from heaven.
Anya felt it with her mind.
Is it true? Does the sword actually have a name? The sword from heaven.
The Wallace sword, with an onion-shaped pommel of gilded iron, the original scabbard, hilt, and belt supposedly made from the skin of Hugh Cressingham, an English commander.
Lovely. And also gone, no doubt, to Lawton.
What made some of these swords divine, god-touched? That they were wielded by devout men for holy causes?
Or is it in the forging?
The finest swords were forged without flaws and impurities in the metal that would cause the blades to break. But even the finest blades had some minor imperfections that caused them to crack and fracture during battles. In centuries past, there wasn't a precise recipe, making the crafting a little mysterious, which was why some legendary blades were believed to be laced with mystical properties and purposes. Poor tempering made a sword less flexible, weak and brittle. Using the precise amount of carbon, manganese, and chromium smacked of alchemy and sorcery.
If it took 3 years to make Joyeuse and Durandal, how long had it taken to make the sword from heaven?
She found a link for swordplay in France and followed it to the headline, Swordsman Slays Buddhists. The article wasn't from centuries ago. It was from earlier this week.
Oh, dear God in heaven.
Some Buddhists were shot. Others were killed by what forensic examiners claimed were sword slashes. One survivor, a toddler, said two black men did it. Gaetan and Luke.
What the hell? Why go after Buddhists in a bookstore? Did the bookstore have a famous named sword?
According to the article, the only thing missing was the cash box, reported taken.
Was there some sacred sword hanging on the wall that the police didn't know about?
Then Anya found another article. That same night, six Rouen businessmen had been killed in their homes, four of them shot in the head, two slashed with a sword. Police said the only thing the men had in common was that they were confirmed Scientologists. Buddhists, Scientologists, and swords. Anya closed the laptop and set it on the floor beside the bed. She wanted out of here, now. Get back to France, find Dr. Lawton, and figure out what the hell was going on. But she'd made a promise to Rue. She looked at the clock on the medical monitor. 10:59. After midnight would be the next day. Anya closed her eyes and settled back into the pillow. An hour's nap. The warm sun on her face woke her. Rue was at the window, leaning against the sill.
I thought you said you were coming by last night. I waited up for you.
I came by, but I stayed in the lobby. Do you feel up to leaving?
I wanted to leave yesterday.
So, have you decided where we are going?
Back to France. I don't know. Let's start with Paris. That's where Dr. Lawton lives.
And what is your plan for Paris?
The Louvre is on the list.
I've been to that museum one too many times.
You don't need to come with me. I work better alone.
I could see it again.
First, though, I need to go back to school. You don't need to accompany me there either.
One should never stop learning.